Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and yesterday was soaking wet, the next few days hot and dry. A good mulch might just help your garden weather the extremes. So we're going to talk about your choices in mulch today, and of course, later on, we'll also be answering your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. With me is Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Charity.
And Richard Giron is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. And I know Ames is very wet. How are things with a flash flooding yesterday? And I know that the creek and the river are still really high today.
Right. We had, I think, in Ames, 4 to 5 inches, some areas maybe more. And so there's local flooding. Brookside Park is underwater. Certain areas are underwater. But no major flooding at this point, thankfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now preserving moisture may be the very last thing on anybody's mind.
Not for a while yet.
Yes.
Especially in that part of the state. But Linda, let's talk about mulch. Let's talk about some of the important things that mulch can do for your garden. And of course, preserving moisture is one of those things.
Yes. And some things that you might have seen with all this rain, especially rain that comes down as hard as and fast as it does, is we get a lot of washing. And a mulch will help that. It'll deter the washing quite, you know, the mulch will go, but the soil won't. So it does help with erosion and runoff by reducing the impact of the rain on the bed. So you don't get as much soil washing away. But mulches have a lot of good characteristics to it and good advantages in a garden. Most of us think of, oh, I want a mulch to keep the weeds down. And the weeds that you manage with a mulch are usually the annual weeds, like the little tree seeds that start sprouting, some of the foxtail grasses or crabgrass. It does help with the annual grasses. Now, some of the persistent perennial weeds, such as thistles, dandelions, they will still find their way up through an organic mulch, unless, let's say, you put newspaper or something down underneath. But that's what we most often think of for mulches. But it also helps conserve soil moisture. So once the moisture is there, it reduces the amount of evaporation off the soil surface. So it does a really good job with that. And if you're using it in your vegetable garden, it does help reduce fruit and vegetable spoilage, like when the fruit sits on the surface of the soil and the plants and the foliage diseases on the tomatoes. So a mulch does help that. Moderates the soil temperatures. The organic mulches, such as bark chips, grass clippings, hay straw, that helps moderate the soil temperatures. Now, the black plastic mulches, the synthetic mulches that we use in our vegetable gardens, that tends to warm up the soil, but most organic mulches tend to cool it in the spring and keep it cooler and moderate that temperature. And what I like in it about organic mulches, such as bark chips, it just cleans up the garden and it makes it look so fresh and nice. So it's got a very attractive background for your garden plants.
Now, let's talk about all of the different kinds of mulches that are available, because you've already mentioned just part of this huge array of things that we can call mulch and put in our garden. So let's start at one end of the continuum with the grass clippings and the straw. What are the advantages to that kind of mulch?
Well, the advantage is that they're pretty readily available. I mean, if you mow your lawn, collect your clippings, you have grass clippings. There are some pros and cons to that. The pros is it's readily available, and it does do a pretty good job. However, you don't want to apply it too thick, and if your lawn has been treated with a broadleaf herbicide to keep the dandelions down and other things, it's best if you don't use those grass clippings for at least 2 to 3 mowings, because that herbicide can volatilize and may cause some problems around your plants, and you don't want that. So grass clippings from weed-infested lawns, such as dandelions with lots of seeds on it, will also find their way into your garden as well. So those are some of the things to watch with the grass clippings. The straw, if you have it available, looks great in a vegetable garden, does a wonderful job with that. Not quite as attractive and ornamental in a perennial flower garden, but you only need to apply about a couple inches of that in your garden, then keep reapplying because it does break down readily. Same thing with grass clippings.
All right, and they can also blow away if you get a strong breeze.
They certainly can. So we've got lots of choices when it comes to organic mulches. You can go anywhere from the nice, expensive bark mulches of various textures, various colors, various size chunks, you might say, all the way down to the more expensive but very nice-smelling cocoa bean shells. Some gardeners have use those. They're beautiful on the garden. You only apply an inch or two. They're a little more expensive and they do have a nice aroma, but dog owners should be aware when they're using cocoa beans, because if a dog starts smelling it, chews on it, and it could cause some irritation, some poisoning, some vomiting with the dog. So they're beautiful. They wash out in a heavy rain as well, but they look very nice. Some others are corn cobs, if you have them in your vegetable garden. You can put them around and around your raspberries.
It's like chunked up corn cobs?
Up corn cobs, yeah. Grass clippings, leaves, of course, and newspapers. I think newspapers make a real good lining over the top of your soil, and then put your bark mulch on top. Some people like to use landscape fabric, and that works okay, too. But the landscape fabric kind of tends to be slippery. So if you have it sort of on a slope, sometimes the landscape fabric tends to make the bark mulch slide off. But it does keep the weeds down underneath it for more permanent control of weeds. But newspaper is a temporary control because it does block the sun. Put a couple layers, 2-3 layers down, then water it down. You might want to water it just to hold it in place, and then put your mulch on top, whether it be grass clippings in the vegetable garden or perennial garden, or in your ornamental bed, because you cover it up and it does break down.
Let's talk about wood chips for a moment, because if you go to the garden center, there are different places to get wood chips. But if you go to a garden center, you can see a wide array of wood chips in various colors. Mm-hmm. So if you want to accent your landscaping, you can pick a certain color. Is there anything to be concerned about with those when you think about your vegetable garden?
Go ahead, Richard.
Well, as far as wood chips, I probably wouldn't use those in the vegetable garden. I would prefer to use things that break down more quickly, like the straw, the grass clippings, the shredded leaves, and use the wood chips around ornamentals, trees, shrubs, perennial beds.
More permanent plantings.
Right, more permanent plantings, correct.
All right, and now let's say you have a chipper at your home, and you want to just chip up, you know, whatever tends to fall down from your trees. Are there pitfalls with that, even with the ornamentals? Like, let's say you chip up walnut wood. Could that poison things?
Well, if it's just a small component of that mix, it should be okay. Mm-hmm. But if it's strictly walnut debris, I probably would not use it in the garden, because that wood does contain juglone, which may affect the health of the plant. So if it's strictly walnut, I would probably place it elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. One other thing with the mulches, the wood mulches, they're in more of a permanent bed. But if you have a problem with slugs, beware, because slugs and snails tend to live underneath those large mulches, the large pieces of bark mulch, and be very happy there in that nice, moist, warm environment. So beware that if you do have some slug problems, it can be exasperated with the mulch.
Right, you're just creating a lovely environment.
Right.
An inviting home.
Yes.
All right, so you mentioned cocoa bean shells, which is one of the more exotic mulches. Are there any other mulches that are kind of getting to be trendy that we've seen lately?
Nothing new, I would say, on that. Some people do use rock, and I'm not real fond of rock. It kind of looks nice initially, but invariably soil does blow into the bed and you get things coming up, and it's hard to get rid of those plants once they come up. And the other thing is, if you decide, let's say 5 years down the road, you really don't like the rock, it's really hard to remove that because it tends to embed itself into the soil. So, and it doesn't provide the same benefits as an organic mulch would also. So I'm not real fond of rock, but if you do use rock, I would say to put landscape fabric underneath it. So if you change your mind, you can more easily remove that rock mulch.
Mm-hmm. And Linda, you mentioned black plastic mulch, which is used to warm up the soil, maybe give plants kind of a head start. It's used in more of an agricultural type situation sometimes. Is there any reason that you would want to use that in your home garden?
Yes, a home vegetable garden, definitely. I think it has very strong merits in a vegetable garden. You can find various widths. Usually the width that you find in a 50-foot roll is about 3 foot wide. You bury the edges. You lay it right on the soil. And what it does is it warms up the soil in the spring. It really helps conserve the soil moisture underneath it, and it reduces, it just totally eliminates the weeds except for the holes that you put in to put in your transplants. It does an excellent job. Some of the disadvantages are it's about a one-year use only, so you do have to dispose of it, and you have to put it in the trash, and some people, you've got to be conscious of that, of amount of trash that you generate. But it does do an excellent job keeping weeds down and conserving soil moisture.
And but later in the summer, when it gets really hot, does it ever cause problems?
No, it really doesn't cause too much problems. But it's just one thing to be aware of is that when you're planting the plants through the little hole in the plastic, you don't want that stem of their tomato plant or pepper plant to be right next to the edge of that plastic of that hole, because it does get warm and it could cause some damage and scalding to the stem of the plant. But it tends to moderate out, and the plants that you do use in a black plastic mulch situation do like warmer temperatures. And make sure, one more thing,
yeah.
When you are using black plastic mulch, make sure you secure all the edges of the mulch with soil or something to hold it down. Soil usually works well. You dig a little trench, bury it, and it seems to stay in place pretty well. Because if a strong wind comes along and whips it up, it's going to do a lot of damage to your little transplants.
All right. And you also have to be pretty careful with watering to make sure that the plants are getting enough moisture, right?
That's right. To make sure. Now, commercial growers may put drip irrigation underneath their plastic. But when you water, make sure it tends to seep down into those holes.
All right. Any mulch that you just absolutely hate that we should stay away from?
I guess we're talking personal preferences
here.
In that situation, I do not like sawdust. As a mulch, you can apply it. You don't have to go on very thick, but it tends to be real crusty, and it's very high in carbohydrates or carbon, and it's hard for the soil to break the microbes to break it down. So I think it's a real problem when it comes to that, and you have nitrogen deficiencies.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions. With me, Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Ag, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. And we'll start with an email question from Margaret in Shoeyville. She says, here's my question for today. This sounds like a riddle, but it's not. So good luck with this. She says, what plant looks like poison ivy with the three leaves, but then has two leaves on either side of the stem below the three leaves? It has a woody stem. It's growing everywhere, and I just pulled some this morning with my bare hands.
Well, the one that looks the most like poison ivy would be a box elder seedling. It's a maple. Mm-hmm. Box elder is native to Iowa, and so the seedlings are fairly common, but the key difference is they both have three leaflet leaves, but the box elder has opposite leaves, the poison ivy alternate leaves. So that's the big difference.
All right.
On that.
So she should take a close look.
Right.
I still would have used gloves, I think.
Right. Look.
Yeah.
Don't touch. Look.
Right.
Plus,
right.
Doesn't poison ivy have a little bit of a red or pink tinge?
Sometimes, but poison ivy varies a little bit. Mm-hmm. You can have leaflets that have lobes on them. Others do not. So they vary quite a bit. Sometimes the leaves are a dark green, sometimes kind of a light green. So they vary quite a bit. Mm-hmm. but that leaf arrangement does not change. It's always alternate. So,
all right. Well, good luck, Margaret. And the pharmacy has some great soaps that you can help you at least shorten the duration of poison ivy. Mm-hmm. All right. Bev has this question. She says, I have a plethora of ostrich ferns, I think, and I'm wondering if there's any reason not to use them as mulch in my vegetable garden.
If the ferns have been kind of crushed up, they should be fine. Should be fine. No problem.
And they'll dry real quickly because they dehydrate very fast when you pull them out. So I think that's probably a good alternative.
All right. Here's a question from Susan and Jewel. As I pulled out some brown tulip stems from my garden, I also pulled up 3 tulip bulbs. What should I do now with them at this point?
I would probably toss them. I'm guessing they're probably so small they're not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I'd be inclined to toss them.
All right. Let's go to the phone. Cecile is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Cecile.
Hi. I have a question about controlling the height of fall-blooming perennials like asters. They're about 18 inches tall. Can I pinch them back? And if so, how much and how long? Same for mums. And mm-hmm. what about leggy cranesbill geraniums?
I'll take
can
the
I cut
mums.
Those back?
The mums, you really could be pinching them anytime as soon as they start emerging and they get to be about 4 inches tall. I typically pinch the centers off at that point and then continue to do that until about early July. Like the first week in July, stop doing that. I mean, or you could stop any time, but one or two pinches gives you that nice rounded mounded mum. Same thing can be done with asters, but you don't want to go pinching them clear into July either, because they're fall blooming, they're photoperiodic, and let them form their flower buds at the end of their stems.
Well, if they're so tall now, how far down can I take them? If they're 18 inches high now, how far can I pinch them?
Oh, halfway.
Okay. And the cranesbill geraniums?
You really can't pinch those. They're not going to bloom if you do. I would just plant them basically where they can grow to their mature size and just leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Danita is on the line next in Story City. Hi, Danita.
Good morning.
What's your question?
When can one plant a fall garden to raise things like radishes and leaf lettuce?
Well, as far as those, they mature very quickly, so I would probably start maybe around mid-August, late August. Mm-hmm. You can also maybe start some carrots, maybe some beets, maybe some peas. Try some peas, mm-hmm. possibly.
And all of that mid-August to the end of August.
Right.
You need to check with the seed package. The radishes and lettuce, they're, 30 days or so. Your peas might be 55 to 65 days. So you want to get them ready to be harvested. And so check the average frost date in your area and then check the seed package for days to maturity and give yourself another 10 days perhaps from there.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Danita. Next up, Sharon in Johnston. Planning ahead, Sharon. What's your question?
Well, I am wondering how I can keep my cannas over winter. I live in an apartment, so I don't have a basement. And I do have a garage that I rent, but can I keep my cannas over winter in that garage that's not heated?
Well, the key is the temperature in that garage. They cannot be allowed to freeze. And so if it gets below freezing, that's not going to be suitable. What you're looking for is a storage location where the temperature is around 40 to 45, but it never gets below freezing. And so you typically dig them up in the fall, you let them dry for a day or two, and then put them in an open box or crate, and then find that place that's very cool but never gets below freezing.
Yeah, there's nothing like a insulated blanket I could put over the box in the garage that might help to keep them out there?
That might help a little bit, but if it gets down to 20 below zero sometime in the winter, the garage may get down to maybe teens or low single digits, and it may get too cold.
Mm-hmm. In other words, I find a person who has a basement.
Yes, that would work.
That's the best answer. Find a friend who has a basement or a heated garage or attached garage.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Sharon. Let's do a couple email questions here. This one's from Elizabeth in Cedar Rapids. Last year, my carrots all went straight to flower. No carrots formed. Any thoughts as to why? It was all new seed from a local source, and I thought carrots are biennial.
And they are. So that does sound amazing to me. I don't have a good answer to that because they are biennial plants. So when you plant those the first year, they develop that nice long root. It's a storage root. And then the following year, just like the wild carrot, it flowers and produces seeds. So I really have no explanation for that.
All right. She goes on to say, I did save the seed, but it got washed out and I didn't get it replanted. I test germinated some seed and wet paper towels in a Ziploc and had nearly 100% germination. Is it too late to plant now? And do you think the seed will be viable? I had three varieties planted originally.
First of all, that's a lot of questions. First question is it too late to plant? Absolutely not. You can go ahead and plant. But the key is the soil might be a little bit warm, so I would dampen the soil, let it cool off a little bit, wait until the nighttime temperatures are a little bit cooler, daytime temperatures no higher than 80 perhaps. And we have clear until the middle of July or after, as Richard was saying, for a fall garden to plant those seeds. So soil temperature needs to be a little bit cooler, and keep that soil moist. Sow the seed and don't, it's kind of like planting new grass seed. You don't ever want to let that dry out. So keep it moist, and they're a little slower to germinate when the soil temperatures are higher, but they should do well for you, especially if you've already tested the germination and know that seed is still good.
Now, if she used this seed last year and didn't have a carrot crop, would you use the same seed this year?
I would be inclined to buy new, but they can try again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was something as far as the weather that did that, but I would be inclined to maybe buy new, just to be on the safe side.
Just to be on the safe side. It's not that expensive, but it could have happened last year as maybe they got started germinating, just started emerging the radical coming out of the seed, and it dried out, and that killed the seed. So there could have been a number of factors associated with that, or they could have planted it too deep. A lot of different things. Carrots should be planted very shallow. They're small seeds, just barely covered.
All right. Here's a question from Greg. He says, I recently noticed a vertical crack on the south side of my red oak. The tree looks healthy except for bugs chewing small roundish holes through lots of the leaves. It is 9 inches in diameter at 4 feet up. The crack runs 5 feet straight up from the ground. It's between an eighth and a quarter of an inch deep. It looks old, not fresh, with no weeping or bug invasion obvious. The bark is not loose, peeling, or disrupted. It just has this narrow crack. What do you think?
Obviously not a good thing, but on the other hand, it's not anything fatal, and they really can't do much to help. Putting on a pruning paint, a wound dressing doesn't do any good. So I would monitor the tree. I would check it. As long as the bark is not peeling off, as long as it's just the crack itself and the bark doesn't start to peel off, the tree can deal with that. If, however, in a year or two, they start to see pieces of bark coming off, that would suggest the injury is getting larger and larger, and that may threaten the life of the tree. But if it doesn't, then the tree may be just fine for many, many years.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Bill is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a prickly pear cactus in my front yard, and it doesn't bloom all the time, but it's blooming now, and it's got like these beautiful yellow flowers on top of it. And some friends of mine now want a piece of it, and I'm wondering when the best time is to like trim off some of it, because it's pretty large. So they want to put them in their flower gardens. When's
right.
the best time to trim that back?
You can almost do that any time. I would just take a sharp knife and cut it off, and I would actually probably take maybe a pot or something and fill that with coarse sand. Now let the cut surface kind of heal over for a couple days so it's not fleshy, and then stick the actual cut end into your coarse sand, keep it moist. It should root in a few weeks, and then plant it in the ground.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bill. Next up, let's go to Bethany in Des Moines. Hi, Bethany.
Hi, Bethany actually passed the phone off to me. This is Nick.
Hi.
Hi. Like Bethany.
So we had some landscaping done early May, and we had a 30-inch retaining wall put in, and kind of as a privacy barrier, we had some Holmstrap arborvitaes planted about, I'd say, probably 2 feet apart, five of them. And I'm getting a lot of dead brown spots throughout the arborvitaes, and I'm wondering if maybe we're overwatering or underwatering, or if that's common, or maybe what we can do to battle that. Should I trim them off as they come up? Or
if they're totally brown and basically crunchy, they're dead,
yeah.
And I would prune them out.
Yep.
As far as watering, if they were planted in May, I would say at this point, if it's dry, once a week should be fine if you water thoroughly as far as frequency. I would just water them well. The water should go down several inches, let's say 8-10 inches into the ground. And if you do that, they should be fine for about a week. And obviously, if we get a good rain, like an inch or so of rain, they're fine for another week. So about once a week. And I would continue to do that through the fall and into maybe early winter. That's very important for them to get a chance to absorb water in the fall if the weather is dry. So keep on doing that October and possibly into mid to late November.
Okay. Sounds great.
All right.
Thank you guys very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org. Neil is up next in Harlan. Hi, Neil.
Good morning.
What's your question?
About 2 weeks ago, clover with the little white heads started to take over my lawn. Earlier in the spring, I sprayed and took care of the dandelions and the little thistles, but now I seem to have this problem.
Right. Some people like clover. Some people don't. As far as controlling it, I think I'd be inclined to wait and do it in the fall and put on a broadleaf herbicide, and they'll take care of things like dandelion, plantain, clover, even some violets. So I'd be inclined to wait until maybe late September or so.
So broadleaf herbicide, 2,4-D, would also control the clover?
I would probably use a product like Trimec, a product that has two or three different actual compounds in it. And you do that because no one compound effectively destroys everything. So if you have, let's say, for example, a product that has 2,4-D in it, possibly dicamba, MCPP, possibly triclopyr, if you have something that has two or three compounds in it, you get a wider range of broadleaf weed control.
Got it. All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Neil. And next up, we'll go to Greg in Urbandale. Hi, Greg. Oh, sorry. My fault there. Hi, Greg.
Yes. Hello. We have a Japanese barberry, the one with the red leaves, and we've had it about 20 years. It's very healthy. All of a sudden, it's withering. Leaves are withering and dying. No evidence of insect infestation or anything of that nature. I thought I'd check and see if you had any insights.
That has been a common problem this year, a very common problem. And I suspect it may be verticillium wilt, which is a fungal disease. It's a vascular disease. And it basically occurs on a wide variety of plants, everything from tomatoes to raspberries, to strawberries, to trees and shrubs. It affects a wide range of plants. And basically what it does, it's a vascular tissue, a vascular disease, so it basically kills branches. And there's no way to spray for it as far as a fungicide. You can't do that. So basically what you have to do is prune out the branches and hope that it doesn't keep on spreading to the rest of the plant. There's no way to stop it. It very well could, but there's no way to stop it. And so if you do prune out...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so if you do prune out the branches, what you want to do after each pruning cut is to disinfect the pruning shears. You can use household bleach, one part bleach, nine part water, but you need to disinfect the pruning shears because if you're pruning additional branches, you don't want to be possibly spreading it to other parts of the plant. So disinfect each pruning cut.
Okay. There's no, since the plant was healthy for the last 20 years and growing, what all of a sudden causes this fungus to appear in the soil?
It's in the soil, and for some reason it invades the plant. There's really no explanation for it. It's there, and for some reason it infects the plant. It gets into the root system and then goes into the branches.
All right, Greg, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions at 866-780-9100. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Gail is, I'll say who I'm talking with today. Linda Nave is here, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And Gail is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Gail.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is about mulch that has, we bought bags of mulch last year, late in the year, didn't put them down, didn't open the bags, and they're, and they sat out on the patio all winter. And I wondered if I should still use them. Sometimes I find that they have white, white mold.
I would still go ahead and use it. That's not going to harm plants.
And it will go away.
And it should go away. Once it dries out, it should go away. So I'd go ahead and use it. Absolutely.
All right, Gail, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a couple more email questions here. This is one from Kay. She says, I piled a huge pile of wood chips under my walnut tree that I have composted quicker than I could get them moved. It's great compost, but do you think the walnut jug loan has affected the compost enough that I should not use it on the vegetable garden?
I don't think so, no, no.
So she can go ahead and use it?
I would, yeah.
All right, great. Here's a question from HM. I have a patch of black raspberries, 25 by 25 feet. It has been very wild and difficult to remove the old canes. Mm-hmm. I'd like to set them up on a trellis system after harvest this year to make harvest easier next year and possibly expand it. I know this will probably reduce next year's yield, but when is the best time to do this since it will take some severe pruning?
I would do it early next spring, and I might also go out and kind of mark off rows and maybe make definite rows and maybe destroy some plants. So it's not a 25-foot wide thicket, mm-hmm. but I have a planting that has several rows in that planting.
He also wants to know when is the best time to transplant black raspberries.
Early spring before they begin to leaf out.
All right, so this is all a project for next spring.
Probably for next year, right. But they can plan it as far as decide what they want to do and then do that promptly in the spring.
All right, and here's a question from Nate. I have some established peonies I would like to transplant to another part of my yard. Can this be done? And if so, when is the best time to do it?
The best time to do it would probably be in the fall. Late August is a good time, or you could wait until next spring. But really, I prefer in the fall. And make sure when you plant that you don't plant it too deep. The bud should only be a couple inches below the soil surface at most. So it seems like you should plant it deeper and make sure you get as much of that tuberous root, that big thick root system as possible. So they go down pretty deep. And peonies don't like to be disturbed. So it might take a year or so before they bloom again. But be assured that if you plant it properly, water it in well, maybe even mulch it in the fall, and so it gets well established for next year.
All right, and here's an email from Laura. I just bought a new home, and it came with an overgrown lilac bush. It did not appear to have bloomed this spring. How much do I need to prune it to ensure that I have a healthy bush going forward?
So what I would do if it's been there for several years overgrown, I'd wait till next March, late March. I would go out there and select three to five of the largest, oldest stems, cut them near the ground, and leave the rest, and maybe come back the next year and take out a few more, and basically get rid of the old growth over maybe 3 or 4 years.
And how long do you think before she'd see results from that?
I would think that they should see some flowers every year. They really should. When you prune out the old growth, that should encourage new shoots from the base. Those new shoots should bloom in a few years. So if you keep on doing that on a regular basis, you should have a nice, healthy, fairly vigorous plant with blooms.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Dennis is on the line in Boone. Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning, everybody.
What's your question?
Well, I've got a question. Okay, I moved my tomato plants and pepper plants into a new spot in the garden, so I'm kind of trying to rotate. So I've been planting greens, collard greens, turnips, and Swiss chard in that area. My question with the turnip greens is, or the turnips, is, so the leaves are, you know, probably 8 to 12 inches long, and I've been thinning them as I go. And we're eating the greens. My question is now, how many leaves can I take off? Because I randomly go through the row and kind of pull leaf here and there. How many leaves, how much does that affect the root development of the actual turnip?
It will.
I want to be able to harvest both greens and the turnip roots.
You want your cake and eat it too.
Exactly. I'm a double dipper.
Well, for one thing, I would definitely thin it out so that you have plenty of space for those turnips that you want to have the nice large roots. So thin them out. Good. And as you thin, you can use those thinnings for the leaves. And so I would thin them to about 3 or 4 inches apart. But if you're going to be removing the leaves from the ones you want to keep, I wouldn't take more than a fourth of the leaves at one time.
Okay.
That plant is using those leaves to build up that root. So the more you take off, the slower that development's going to occur.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking. It's a very bushy row. So I just kind of pull a leaf here and then try to take more than one leaf from each plant.
You should be fine then.
Okay. All right. Very good.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Dennis. Next up, we've got Tom in Cumming. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I was wondering if the panel of experts could expound a little bit on the values or drawbacks of using worm castings in the garden or houseplants.
Well, the worm castings is worm manure. So what you're doing is you're applying a very organic substance to your potting soil. And, you know, it's just like adding a compost. It does a good job. I think it helps build organic matter, in which retains the nutrients well in your soil. Is it completely necessary? No. Does it help? Perhaps. So there are some attributes to it. It's a lot of work to do that, but it's definitely going to be a benefit in your soil. But you don't need to apply too much. I mean, you don't want to
use it in moderation, especially in a flower pot.
Right. And you don't want to just have solely worm castings. Mix it in with some good garden soil or some potting soil mix. And it's hard to say what the ratio would be, but I probably wouldn't go more than a fourth worm castings and the rest potting mix. But yeah, it works well in the soil. It's another source of organic material.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got another Tom, this one in Carroll County. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Yeah, I thought it was my turn last time. Anyway, I've got replanted a sugar maple, about a 6-footer then, and that was 3 years ago, and it's really grown well. It's about a 20-footer now, and I'm wondering when is the best time to replant it. I can't get a clamshell to dig it up, so I'm going to have to use a loader to try and get under and make as big a ball of dirt as I can. But when should I do that?
I'm not sure I would try. I say that because I think that's a pretty big tree, and I think as far as what you have available as far as a digging tool is not the best. And I'm thinking it may not survive the ordeal. So I probably wouldn't. I would probably try to, if you want to move that tree, that's a pretty big tree to move at this point. You're going to have, I would try to get a very large tree spade, a very large tree spade. Which?
A large what?
A very large tree spade. Because would cut through the roots. It wouldn't tear or break the roots like your proposed method. And so I would probably try to use the tree spade or not even do it at all, I think.
Yeah, I can't do it at all then. Yeah, I'm going to have to just cut it down. I planted it. I was trying to save it as a replant so I could move it later on. And it's grown so well, I let it go too long.
Mm-hmm. So, bummer.
I'm going to have to kill it. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that, Tom. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Randy is up next in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. We got 6/10 of an inch of rain yesterday. Got a two-part question. I didn't catch all of what you had to say about using Tarmac to kill off the white Dutch clover in the yard. And then the other question is, I've got this black bohemian plums that are about the size of your thumb, and there's a little oozing white juice coming out of all the plums. Did a bug sting it, and will that screw them up permanently for this year's crop?
That's a definite possibility where something has pierced the skin, and in response to that, they ooze out the sap. So when you see that something has damaged the fruit, I suppose it could be hail, if you had hail recently, where something, again, has damaged the fruit. But whenever you have damage, they typically ooze sap. So either an insect or maybe something like hail. As far as the herbicide, it's nice to use something that has two or three different compounds in it so that if you're trying to control a number of different weeds in the yard, that product will do it.
Richard, if they can't find Trimac, what are the three products that you usually recommend to have in that blend of?
Well, right, the compounds that are typically found in these products are things like 2,4-D, MCPP, dicamba, triclopyr, and they do have to list that on the front of the label under active ingredients, so you can actually read it.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Mary in Grinnell. Many Bradford pear trees in our area are showing major problems. Some have brown leaves or bare limbs. A twig that fell in the storm had small white growths on the underside of the leaves. Does that seem to be connection? What are your thoughts?
I think there are different things occurring. I think what may have happened was that we had a very unusual winter where we had very warm temperatures, above normal temperatures in November and the first half of December. And then it got bitterly cold in late December, and I think those temperature changes may have damaged the tree. They may have something else in the actual foliage. That might be a rust or something like that, but I don't see the connection. I'm guessing the dieback may be due to the weather.
Here's a question from Ralph and Carol. He says, I planted two crabapple trees, the variety is Camelot, 9 years ago, and I'm struggling to keep them the same size. I severely pruned one of them in early spring, and it has rebounded with profuse foliage. It's determined to be the larger one. Any suggestions? I'm thinking of stripping all the leaves off the tree, hoping they will grow back, but set the tree back.
Well, I think the tree is doing basically what it needs to do, what it does naturally. When you actually prune a tree and prune it back severely, you're actually promoting new growth. It's going to grow back very, very rapidly. So maybe lighter pruning might be more helpful, but I think it's going to get to be a bigger tree than they may actually want.
So should he think about pruning the other one to encourage it to grow?
Well, they might encourage the other tree to grow by maybe fertilizing the tree, keeping it well watered. That may help there as far as getting it to grow. And so they're more comparable in size.
All right. But it's pretty hard to keep two trees the same size.
Right.
All right. Here's one from Jason in Humboldt. My clematis vine started to get black spots and wilt. I've trimmed out all the wilted vines. Will it come back?
There is something they call clematis wilt. And it's kind of a mysterious thing where all of a sudden the leaves on certain vines might turn yellow and brown and the whole thing suddenly wilt. The actual cause is not really known, but it's fairly common. And typically the only thing you can do is cut it off. And oftentimes it does come back. Not always, but oftentimes it does.
All right, here's a question from Justin. I have three Scotch pines, which are about 30 feet tall, starting to show signs of distress. They have a lot of brown needles and several small bullet-sized holes in the length of the trunk. Can I save these trees?
Well, I think the holes are probably caused by a woodpecker, specifically a sapsucker. They go after certain trees, pine trees, maple trees, crab apples. The holes are very uniform in size, and they're usually in a straight line, either horizontal or vertical. And they don't really cause that much damage to the tree, fortunately. So that's pretty common. As far as if they are Scotch pine, my biggest concern would be pine wilt, which has been going on for like 30, 40 years. And it destroys the tree very quickly. Usually the tree, if it gets pine wilt, will die within 1 or 2 months, where you have a nice green tree. And then the first thing you see is that the needles turn kind of a sickly yellow or gray-green, and then they turn totally brown. And there's no way to control that. When that happens, all you can do is cut them down. So over the last 30, 40 years, most of the Scotch pine trees in Iowa have been slowly dying and disappearing.
All right. Last question of the day. Ruth is on the line in Winterset. Hi, Ruth.
Good morning. I have the most delightful buckeye tree. And it bloomed profusely this year, and I don't have any buckeyes left. What happened?
Well, I'm
not
sure.
And it usually would have buckeyes by now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should have by now.
It bloomed beautifully.
And it has produced fruit in the past?
Oh, my goodness. I've picked up bushels of buckeyes.
It must have been something that occurred during bloom.
Right.
Either a weather-related event, or it could have been extremely windy and blew the blossoms off before they got pollinated well. Could have been a pollinator issue. It happened at bloom time.
Right. Either the flowers were damaged somewhat by some means, or we didn't get very good pollination for some reason.
This is the first year, and I've picked up buckeyes for years. I give away buckeyes and buckeyes and buckeyes.
And my guess is next year you will too. So
yes.
For some reason, the weather conditions, whatever, were just not good this year. But next year they should.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
All right.
That's my fall exercise, is picking up buckeyes. What am I going to do this fall?
Maybe just go for some nice walks.
Walnuts? Maybe if you have walnuts.
I have to find a walnut tree.
All right. Ruth, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And we are out of time for today. And Linda Nave, I want to say thank you to you, since this is your last appearance on Horticulture Day. You're
going
to retire on July 2nd. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you very much. It's been great. And it reassures gardeners that if somebody has a problem, there's somebody out there that has the same problem. So always call in, because somebody, whatever your interests are, so is theirs. So.
Well, Linda, you've been wonderful over the years.
You.
Thank you so much for being
fun.
A part of it. And enjoy your retirement.
Thank you very much. I sure will.
Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, at least for another couple of weeks. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.